Sunday the 17th of February, Rabbi Yitzchak Shirin, what I learned from my grandfather, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky.
Good morning, everybody. I'd like to just bring out a few points that I, over the years, studying under Rabbi Yaakov, I felt were extremely important lessons. I mean, obviously, sitting with the Gadol Batayra, so Gadol Shimushi Yosem Bilimudo, you can learn from everything that Gadol Batayra does, but particular lessons that maybe we would take less note of. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So let me maybe begin with Rabbi Yaakov's approach to Sisav Ayoshev HaToiv. I was in a yeshiva at one point where the mashkiach of the yeshiva wanted to take the Rosh Yeshiva to its entire. And of course, it was very difficult on the yeshiva, as you probably will understand. And Rabbi Yaakov was somewhat involved in the whole ASIC. And I spoke with Rabbi Yaakov about it because I felt that the mashkiach had a good taina. So Rabbi Yaakov said to me that a mistake that people in Klal Yisrael make is that they look at Choshen Mishpat like Orach Chaim. So like just like in Orach Chaim, it talks about in the morning, a person gets up, he says brachas, he puts on talis, tefillin, Shabbos, tefillah. He says, Avada Neslecha Tchila. He says, that's what you're supposed to do. He says, people think that Choshen Mishpat is also Lecha Tchila. That if I have a problem, I go to a Din Torah. So Rabbi Yaakov said to me, no, Choshen Mishpat is b'dievet. When you can't be mistader, when you can't get along by yourself, then you go to a Din Torah. But the first thing is you have to try to get along by yourself. He said, this particular mashkiach thinks that l'chatzil you have to go to a Din Torah. So of course, in the yeshiva, becomes a mess. Even though it could be that the particular mashkiach was correct. And Rabbi Yaakov actually mentioned at the time that there was also someone I once wanted to take to a Din Torah. So he said, but why didn't I take him to a Din Torah? A particular Rosh Yeshiva. And he said, I didn't take him because what happened? Well, I wanted to take him to a Din Torah because I felt that he was stealing yeshiva money. He was being Moira Hetzer and he was stealing yeshiva money. So what am I supposed to say at the Din Torah? I'm supposed to call him a Ganer. So what is he going to call me? He's going to call me a chakran. He's going to call me a liar. So before you go to a Din Torah, you could sit and talk things over, and you could somehow or another come to a, well, go pshara. He say yashav atay pshara l'fim mishuras hadin, right? But if you go to a Din Torah, then you have to have your tainas already ready. Once you have your tainas ready, then already, of course, one person calls one person the other person a ganef, and the other person calls him a liar, because Avadi doesn't want to be a ganef. So Rabbi Yaakov said that a klal gadol is that in Choshen Mishpat you should know you have to avoid it like the plague. The truth is I was reminded about it because recently before Rosh Hashanah, somebody took me to a Din Torah. In the neighborhood. Someone called me to Din Torah because I wanted to extend my sukkah in Eretz Yisrael. There's a lot of land that's called Shitufi land, you know, around the house, because the building. So someone wanted to take me to Din Torah because I wanted to extend my sukkah. I have a door that leads out to a place where I have my sukkah, and that's my land. And then I wanted to extend it over Shitufi land, and I asked people permission about it. And one person said to me, he's not giving me permission. And no one had a chazak on that piece of land. Nobody used the piece of land. I'm even yovin why he didn't want me to build it. And he said, so I said, look, why do we have to go to Din Torah? We could sit down and we could talk. We come to a pshar. So he said to me right away, he says, a Din Torah is the best thing because then the Rabbanim paskin, so then, you know, I won't be angry at you. the kids there, I actually called the Dayanim, and they also agreed with me that the best thing is to keep it out of the din Torah, but it took me to the din Torah. But to show you, you know, and this we get into another reading, to show you in the Negiyas HaAdam, how Nogeya Bedover, the person was, is that he thought for sure he's going to win the din Torah. He had no doubt that he was going to win the din Torah. I told him that it's not clear at all you're going to win the din Torah, because the back is not being used for anything. I'm going to extend my sukkah, and people have a right to build their sukkahs there, and I have Dina de Bar Metzra there. I'm right over there, just extending where I am, right? And nobody builds over there, so no one has a chazaka. So now the idea was, of course, he would let me build my sukkah there, sukkahs, but I wanted to extend my floor. I didn't want the sukkah to be on just dirt. So that he didn't want to let me do. So he said, you're not going to be able to stop me because it didn't tire. And that's the way it was, Taka. We went to the din Torah. And it was clear to Dayanim that he wasn't timing, that he doesn't want me there because he really thought there was a problem. He was timing because he didn't want me to have a bigger sukkah. Of course, they didn't say it, but in the Pesach Din, I got sent to my house. The Pesach Din was that he's not claiming the land for himself, and of course he can extend the sukkah. That was it. And Agav, he was angry at me anyway, the guy. He took me to a din Torah, and then he was angry at me for winning. Right? So Rabbi Yaakov always held that that's the Negiyas HaAdam. The Negiyas HaAdam is that he always, you know, there's a famous story about the Shach. The Shach had with somebody, right? And they went to a town where nobody knew the Shach. Right? So it's a famous story, and that had been Torah, and the person paskin against the Shach, and the Shach asked him why, and he said, because I have a sefer that just came out, it's called the Shach, and he seems to pass like that in Shulchan Aruch, because in the Gemara, the Shach himself didn't see it. Rabbi Yaakov always held that that's why a person has to have good midas. In this week's parsha, again, this past week's parsha, so it says in the Gemara that the Chayshin is Mechapa Alivus Hadin, you know, and Ma'avis Hadin. So, you know, each beggar is Mechapa on something else. It's Mechapa Alivus Hadin. And it says Aaron was Zeicha to the Chayshin because he wasn't jealous of Moshe. Rashi brings in a Chumash. So Yaakov says, what does one have to do with the other? That Aaron was Zeicha to the Chayshin because he wasn't jealous of Moshe, and it's Mechapa Alivus Hadin. He says, because you don't have Yivus Adin only on one tonight. A person's not jealous. A person's not thinking what's good for me. Right? I once heard there was a Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Yaakov learned by him, Betzim. In World War I, Rabbi Yaakov left Slobodka because there was a drift in Lithuania. He didn't want to go into the army. So he left Lithuania, he went to Poland. There was a yeshiva in Poland run by a Slobodka. The yeshiva was Lomża. Town, a very famous town in Poland, Lomża, and Rabbi Chiel Mordechai Gordon, Zechon Levracha, ran the yeshiva. Rabbi Yaakov was a little bit younger than Rabbi Chiel Mordechai, so he came to the yeshiva, and he went in as one of the Bacharim, older Bachar. I even spoke to people who learned there during that time, and they remembered Rabbi Yaakov at the time. And Rabbi Chiel Mordechai Gordon, whenever he had a problem, he was in America for a while, then he moved back to Eretz Yisrael, after the war I'm talking about. So whenever he had a problem, he went to Rabbi Yaakov, because he said, when I ask Rabbi Yaakov, I'm sure he's not thinking. When I ask Rabbi Yaakov advice, I'm sure he's not thinking. He's not thinking, how is this relevant to me? He's only thinking, how is it relevant to the person who's asking? That's Negiyas. Negiyas is always like, you're asking me a question? Okay, let me first think, you know, if it's relevant, if I can, what's in it for me, so to speak. So I only ask Rav Yaakov, because he never thinks that way. Because that's the Yisod of Negiyas. The Yisod of Negiyas is, and people who think they don't have Negiyas have the worst Negiyas, Rav Yaakov used to say. The people who think that they don't have it, it's only when you check yourself very, very well that something I'm reminded of. Reb Chatzka Levenstein, Zechon Levracha, when he was Nifter, so I was talking to Reb Yaakov about it, And I said, you know, Rav Chatzka Levinstein was one of the great Balei Musa. And another, I mentioned that another great Balei Musa was Nifter. And he was basically from the old school, pre-World War II. So Rav Yaakov said to me like this. He said to me, he's not a Balei Musa, he's a Balei Avoda. That's what he said to me. He's not a Balei Musa, he's a Balei Avoda. I said, what's the difference between a Balei Avoda and a Balei Musa? He says, Balei Musa is a philosopher. Because he held the altar of Slobodka was a philosopher. He wasn't just a Balei Avoda. He's a philosopher, a philosopher. He thought about things, right? Rabbi Yaakov used to say, so he said to Rabbi Yaakov, so do you hold yourself for a Balei Musa? So he said, no, I don't hold myself for a Balei Musa, but I know who is and I know who isn't. That's what he said. I know who is and I don't know who isn't. Right? That was Rabbi Yaakov's approach, that, you know, that a person has to, first thing they have to think is if I have negius in something. He says, when you go to a din Torah, automatically you have a negius. Before you go to the Torah, you also have negius, but you go to the Torah, you have to be right, else where are you going? Before you could sit and think and be open-minded. So Yaakov said, that's lechatchila, how to do it. But the evid, if you can't be mistader, so you have to go to a Rav, so you go to a Rav. That was one thing. Rabbi Yaakov held that every individual has to find their uniqueness, both in Kiyum HaMitzvahs and in Midos and in Ashkofes HaChaim. Even though, of course, Rabbi Yaakov was a big Agudist, but it didn't mean that everything he thought was exactly like what Aguda, you know, the platform of Aguda, so to speak. I mean, or within the realm of the platform of Aguda, Rabbi Yaakov could think many different ways. I want to share with you, you know, a few different things. Rabbi Yaakov was really much more known as, in Midos, he was known as the Isha Emes. And that also had to do with the Negiyas, because a person who's looking for the Emes has to get out of his Negiyas. So there's many, many Sipurim, there's many stories about Rabbi Yaakov and Midas HaEmes. But I want to share certain things, how Rabbi Yaakov approached certain subjects that were very interesting. And he approached them really in a very unique fashion. I'll give you a few different examples. Originally, I thought that Rabbi Yaakov loved digduk. You know, it's not common for Rosh Hashiva to love digduk. You could like digduk, or you could be machshev digduk, but Rabbi Yaakov loved digduk. Anyone who ever saw the Emes LeYaakov sees very clearly, because those are the parts that everybody skips. You know, right? Rabbi Yaakov loved digduk, and not only digduk haloshen, he loved the digduk of the trop as well. See, many, many times there, Rabbi Yaakov knew the rules. There are people I know who hold there aren't even any rules in trop. Trop is like a masorah, but of course there are rules, just like in digduk. There's digduk haloshen, there's rules in digduk hanagina in the trop. Rabbi Yaakov used to create new ideas with it. He used to formulate new ideas. He learned all the rules. He knew all the. Rabbi Yaakov could recreate trop very easily. In other words, if theoretically we lost trop, Rabbi Yaakov could bring the whole thing back. He knew all the rules and all the exceptions. It wasn't an easy thing. I saw a couple of svarim on it. They're not easy rules, and there's many exceptions. And so Rabbi Yaakov had a unique approach to many things. He also loved Jewish history. He loved Jewish history. You know, there are makayrus for Jewish history. Chor Yimei Yisraelim, Bina Shnai Star Vadar. Obviously, Chor Yimei Yisraelim has to be how are you going to remember if you don't look in history books? Chor Yimei Yisraelim, Bina Shnai Star Vadar. How can you be Bina Shnai Star Vadar if you don't know what to think about, right? So Yaakov was very much involved in Jewish history. He held it attached the person to the Messiah. Especially today, where the Messiah is weaker today because of the Shoah, he held that a person has to learn Jewish history. The question is, from which svarim should he learn? It's in itself a question, but ekroni, in principle, he held a person should learn Jewish history. I once made up a piece of Torah why Rabbi Yaakov held to learn Jewish history, or how Rabbi Yaakov got it. And I told him over the divrei Torah that I had on why he held you should learn Jewish history. He was a rov in a small town, Rabbi Yaakov, 37, 38 families. It was in Lithuania, Tzitav Yan. And there was a fellow who used to, Tzitav Yan had a lot of chesronis, but had one milo. The chesronis were they didn't have a lot of people, they didn't have a lot of money. If they had a lot of money, so I wouldn't be standing in front of you today. Because Rabbi Yaakov wouldn't have left. Right? Rabbi Yaakov left Tzitav Yan because he couldn't make a living. So he left Europe because of that. But it had a milo was that it was a resort town. So he used to get many rabbonim who came to the town, Shmuel Fundler, other rabbonim as well, from that time in Lithuania. The ones that had a little bit more money used to come for like a dacha, they called it, right into the town. So it was a fellow of Meshulam Fishel Beer, who wasn't a rav, he was a businessman, a very big Talmud Chacham from Rasein, used to come to the town. And he loved Jewish history. At a right, he loved Jewish history because he did publish a book, and in the book, in the Sefer, he has a critique of Gretz. He goes through Gretz's history book. He has a critique of many different places, like 15, 20 pages, a critique. So I saw that he loved Jewish history. And I assumed that Rabbi Yaakov loved Jewish history or got involved because of him, because they used to sit in shmooze. He was a perisha in Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. His father was a Talmud, and Rabbi Yisrael used to stay in their house. When he was a kid, Rabbi Yisrael used to stay in the house, so he saw Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So for Rabbi Yaakov, that was a big thing, you know. The Altar of Slobodka, Sachakol maybe saw Rabbi Yisrael a few times. Rabbi Yaakov learned by the Altar of Slobodka. So by him, it was Rabbi Yisrael stayed in his house. It was a big thing by Rabbi Yaakov. That's what I thought. So Rabbi Yaakov said to me that I was wrong. He says, "Du weißt nicht, ich bin ein origineller Mensch." I'm an original person. He said, every person has to bring out their originality, whether it's in Midos, whether it's in Ashkofa, their approach. Rabbi Yaakov had an interesting approach to many different subjects. I'll give you one example. It came up in the 70s. The question was, you know, the world is getting frumer, and there was a lot more B'nai Torah. So they decided that maybe they should go back to teaching in Yiddish in the schools, in the yeshivas, in the yeshiva tanas, meaning in the elementary school. And then other people held that because there's Eretz Yisrael, they should be teaching in Hebrew. People go to Eretz Yisrael, and they reach a certain age, they should know Hebrew. So they called Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov was on the advisory board of Torah Mesorah, which is represents the day school movement. So Rabbi Yaakov was on the board. And he was asked to speak about the issue. So Yaakov said like this, you know, when a Rebbe has to give over something, the most important, what makes him a good Rebbe is that he gives it over clearly. If he doesn't give it over clearly, what does the Talmud have from him? A lot of times the Talmud, you know, you hear a great shiur and then you walk out and someone says, okay, say it over, I can't say it over. So what's the kunt? It sounded good, it was inspiring, but if you didn't get anything, Tachlis, if you get anything that you could really tangible, so there's a problem there. So if Yaakov said the person has to be able to give over a shear in the most clear, succinct form. And he said like this, he says, if a person thinks in one language and speaks in another language, there's always a discrepancy. Because he always has to think first, you know, to translate it first. That takes time and it takes energy. He says, so there loses a clarity in that. That's what he said. And he even gave an example. In fact, he said, as chata'ay ani askir hayoin. So our little boy in Litta, they used to have Hebrew Sforum from the Maskilim. There was a fellow, Pichman, who used to write Sforum for children in Hebrew. And he said he looked at a few of those when he was a kid and he read them through and he said, that he always had like stories. He had one book of stories with the fox and the stork. How the fox tries to outsmart the stork to get him in order to be able to eat him up. So there's a lot of different masu matin that goes on between them. And of course, the Chasida is Loshen Nekeva, and the Zev is Loshen Zocha. And he saw in the book, Rabbi Yaakov wondered, in the book, the Chasida is wearing pants, and the Zev is wearing a skirt. And Pichman knew Hebrew. He knew Hebrew very well. So, but Rabbi Yaakov also knew Russian very well. He was fluent in Russian. When someone in Slabodka wrote a letter home, they used to ask Rabbi Yaakov for the words, I had a spell. He was fluent in Russian. Till the day of his death, he was fluent in Russian. He always remained fluent in Russian. And he realized that in Russian, Chasida is a Zohar, and Zev is Lashon Nekeva. So Rabbi Yaakov said, Pichman wrote in Hebrew, but he thought in Russian. And he said that the important thing, the most important thing of a teacher is to give over the most clear thing. And since, he said, people are raised on English, both the kids and the teachers at that time in the 70s already were raised already on English, for them to go into Yiddish or Hebrew is going to mean necessarily that they will lose something, so to speak, in the translation. And therefore he held that they should teach in English. Even though Rav Yaakov himself was a Yiddish speaker completely. I only spoke to Rav Yaakov in Yiddish. He didn't speak in any other language. But yet he held that that's the way it has to be. And in fact, he said to them, in what language do you dream? He spoke to the Machanas and he said, what language do you dream? So they all said in English. He says, so what, you're going to teach a Yiddish and you dream in English? That's what he said. He says, if you dream in Yiddish, that's a shot. That's the raya that you have a shlita. You're a shoylet in the language. But if you're dreaming in one language, you're going to talk in another. So you see that it's not automatic. A dream is an automatic thing. It's not something you think about. That was Rabbi Yaakov's one example of a unique approach. There's many other examples that I could share with you. One other example maybe I'll share with you. I once spoke to Rabbi Yaakov about the union of learning without a chavrusa. Now Rabbi Yaakov was a big fan that you should learn with a chavrusa. So I mentioned to him that one zman I wanted to learn one of the zdorim in the yeshiva without a chavrusa. I had different reasons why I wanted to do it, learn without a chavrusa. So the first thing Rabbi Yaakov said, when you learn without a chavrusa, the whole base medrash becomes your chavrusa. Because you can't just sit in a corner, vizavit, and not speak to anyone and learn. How do you know if you're right? You may be making a mistake. But then he said something that was very, very interesting. I felt unique. He said like this, and if you don't learn without a chavrusa, how are you going to learn to listen to somebody else? Now I always thought that I'm learning the chavrusa so he'll listen to me. Rabbi Yaakov said, if you don't learn a chavrusa, you're not going to learn how to listen to anybody else. And then he hit it like this, and he said, I knew somebody who I held was the Gadol Hador in America for 20 years. And he had one great chasarn. He couldn't hear anybody else. I knew who he meant, but we're not going to go into it right now. I couldn't hear anybody else. He said, the most important thing for a teacher is to listen. So if you want to become a teacher, you have to learn how to listen. Most important, teachers think the most important thing is they say a good shiur. He says, that's not the most important thing. Because saying a good shiur, you don't know what the Bokharim got. You said a great shiur, but a lot of times the Bokharim come out of a shiur and they say, oh, he was so deep, I pushed it, and they love it. He was so deep, I didn't understand what he was saying. I said, what do you get out of a shiur if you didn't understand? So it's very nice. He did a great show and everything, but what happened with the Bokharim? Right, Rabbi Yaakov always held that you have to teach the Bokharim on their level, not on your level. That's why you get Tzchar Batola. You get Tzchar Batola because they're babysitting. If you're teaching them a shit that they don't understand, you can't take Tzchar Batola because they're giving you a floor for you to say your shir, so to speak. Right, but Rabbi Yaakov said that the Iker is that you have to really listen and not talk. You have to listen to what the Bokharim are saying. And that's where you could... I remember once, I asked him how a Rebbe has to say a shir. I used to say Gemara Shirim for a number of years. So how did Rebbe have to say? So he said like this, that and he even mentioned the name to me. He said this, Rav Moshe Feinstein had a son-in-law who died at a young age, Rav Moshe Shiskal, Zechon Levracha. a big tzaddik and a big lamnik. And he died at age 52. Very young age, relatively. And Rabbi Yaakov said to me, the way he gives a shiur, you have to give a shiur. So I said, how does he give a shiur? He said, he prepares the basic Gemara and Rishonim, but he doesn't have it worked out. He doesn't have it worked out before he comes into the shiur. He works it out in the shiur. So the Bacharim, a lot of times a person sees a Gavaltik Advar Torah, but what doesn't he see? He doesn't see how he can do that. He doesn't know how he knows that this person must have done it because he's an Ilui, he's a Bal Kishrin Gadol, he's a big Lamdin. But I have to be able to do it. Not just to hear how you do it. I hear you do it. I have to be able to. So he said that Rav Shiskal goes into the shir and he doesn't prepare fully. He just knows the Gemara. In fact, he mentioned that he used to learn through the whole Masechta before the Zman. So he knew all the Gemaras. And he would have a basic idea, but he would work out the shir he's going to say with the fellow. So they saw how he came to his conclusion. And he said, that's the way the Rabbeim have to do. He says, but some of them are afraid to do it because they're afraid they won't come up with the right conclusion. So they want to be prepared, he said. But a person who knows how to do that, he said, that's the way he has to do it. Because then the Bacher sees how the shir developed. How did it become? How did that yisayit, how did you think about it? Because he sees that how it's worked out in shir. That's what Rabbi Yaakov said. Maybe I'll share just one more thing. Rabbi Yaakov held, I mentioned before that Rabbi Yaakov wouldn't have left Lithuania if he would have gotten a job in Lithuania. Actually, he went looking for jobs. He went to bigger cities. He went, I think, to three big cities to get, I don't know if you'd call them today big cities, but in those days, they were Plungyan was considered a bigger rabbonis than Sitivyan, had a few hundred families from families. And he didn't get the job there. And there was different circumstances that Rabbi Yaakov didn't get. In each city, there were different circumstances. And Rabbi Yaakov didn't understand why. You know, he was, could you imagine a person who became the Gadol Hador in America, one of the Gadol Hador in America, couldn't get a job in Plungyan. Didn't make any sense to Rabbi Yaakov, you know. But he didn't get a job, and therefore he went towards the United States, and he got, then eventually there was a certain, everything sort of worked out in a certain way. He became a Rav in Seattle, Washington for 6 months. There was a Rav over there, needed to leave and go on sabbatical for 6 months because he needed to work on with the Barat Sola, because it was during the war, beginning of the war really. And Rabbi Yaakov took a job in Seattle, Washington. Then he was very successful in Seattle, Washington. So the Rav who came back told him that the Rabbonis in Toronto opened up because the Rav had just died. And he had a brother who was a sheikh in Toronto, and the name of the family is Wargelernter. So they had particular pull. So Yaakov eventually got a job in Toronto. And so Rabbi Yaakov said always that, you know, he wondered, like, why he couldn't get the job. So he said, you really never know what's good and what's bad. Because a lot of times we think it's bad, things are bad. And that's the yisoid really in Tzadik Varalei, Rosh HaVetoyvlai, right? That he said, I thought it was going to be very bad. And it turned out, in fact, the truth is that Rabbi Yaakov's brother-in-law, Avram Grzynski, who became the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka, or the Manahel Ruchani of Slobodka, begged him not to take his children along. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Binyamin, two of his older kids already in yeshivas, he said, you can't take them to the United States. He said, there's no real yeshivas there, and what's going to become of them? What's going to become of the kids? And Rabbi Yaakov wouldn't leave them. But they asked him, they said, well, if you have to go, you have to go parnasa, but leave your kids in Europe. Rabbi Yaakov just said, I didn't know what was really better, but I took them along. He spoke to the Kovner Rav, and the Kovner Rav did feel that he should take along the kids. He should go, and he should take along the kids. Kovner Rav said, like you, Rabbi Yaakov, we have 300 in Lithuania, but in America, don't have any. That's what he said to him. Kovner Rav was a very, very smart Jew. So he sent Rabbi Yaakov there. But Rabbi Yaakov said that what you see is that a lot of times, and Rabbi Yaakov the whole time was thinking like for years, and then he became Rosh Yeshiva in Tor Vadas, and he became well known. And Rabbi Yaakov, till the end of his life, said, "You know, I see why I was brought to America. I was brought to America to reestablish in the Haredish world the chinuch. Rav Moshe was really more the paisik, known as the paisik, but Rabbi Yaakov was much more involved in the chinuch of Klal Yisrael and the Torah Mesorah and making decisions for Machanchim. Machanchim used to come to him. So Rabbi Yaakov realized towards the end of his life, Dafka, why he actually was sent to America. Like why didn't he remain in Lithuania? That there was a whole plan here. So sometimes he said you have to wait years and years and years till you realize what the person is, you have to be very patient when it comes to tzaddik v'ra'alei. You have to be, sometimes you think you could find that in a year, sometimes you're zaycha, sometimes you're not zaycha to find that at all, right, in your lifetime. But he said that's what a person has to know, that he's not going to necessarily know why exactly, or if he's zaycha, he'll know after a certain amount of time. Shukriya.